This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, we know transparency with our people is important, but what does sharing your numbers really mean? Are you explaining the backstory behind those numbers and how it affects the business and, most importantly, your employees? My guest, Tim Schaefer, well, he simplifies the numbers side of the business and areas in your point of sale system that you may be overlooking. Hey, Carm Capriotto here. How you doing? Hey, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts. And hey, thanks for joining my mission to advance the aftermarket. You know, this is the place to learn something new every time you listen. Make sure you visit my website, remarkableresults.biz, to have access to over 1,000 archived episodes. Hey, thanks to our partners Apex and Shopware for bringing you this episode. You know, imagine walking into a simulated real-world shop environment with 10 service bays, lifts, and vehicles where you can see product demos and talk capabilities, benefits, and how to use them in real time. Welcome to Joe's Garage at Apex 2022, November 1st through the 3rd, Las Vegas. Hey, be there. Listen here for registration information coming up. Hey, sure, you know your customers love you because they keep coming back, but you should probably capture that testimonial in writing with a 5-star rating prompted by Broadly in the Shopware app. Learn more at GetShopware.com. Hey, a good day to each and every one of my listeners. I'm honored to have Tim Schaefer from Dale Service Center in Davenport, Iowa. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you doing, Carm?
I'm great, man. I heard from a great friend of mine, Rena Rennebaum. She goes, you know Tim Schaefer? I says, no, I really don't. She, well, he's the KPI guy. And I says, oh my God, well, then he's got to be on the show. Not like we don't talk about KPIs enough, but maybe we haven't in a while really kind of focused on what's really important. And I think there's a lot of people that don't appreciate and understand finance, Tim, that just say, I don't want to hear the word, the letters KPI ever again. Just get it out of here. Key performance indicators. Oh, that's what that means. All right. So numbers are supposed to be important to my business. I just love to fix cars.
Sure. I hear that a lot too.
I bet you do. And you also started a coaching company, Level 6 Auto Shop Consulting. So there's a lot here to talk about. Family business. How cool is that? It's great. You ended up buying dad out, what, a whole bunch of years ago?
Yeah, 2007. Been working in the business, I think, forever, since I was a young kid, I guess, off and on throughout school. We've been in business since 1977. So been around the block a few times. We got a great customer base. It's been a good ride.
When was the time that you went from learning to fix and love cars as a technician mechanic to really getting involved in growing and running the business?
Right around early 2000s, I really started moving into the office. I was the tire kid. I was the tech. I was moved up from everything from the low man on total pole all the way up. And I still feel like I'm the low man now. But when I got into the office and started doing like the service advisor stuff, that's when I started paying attention to the numbers, paying attention to, you know, receivable problems, paying attention to car count, ups and downs of being slow with weather and timing or whatever. And then I started kind of thinking about it like, okay, if we did things this way or that way, or if we didn't charge so much or allow people to charge so much, I really had to work on a lot of different parts of the business. My dad was the kind of guy like, just fix and go, fix and go, fix and go. And that's...
I can't pay it today. All right. Okay. Here, sign this ticket, right? Are you still holding receivables today?
Not like we once were. Not like just Joe Smith off the street like we once did because he needed to put braces on his daughter's teeth and so he can't afford to pay right now. That was a good thing about the business. I mean, there were people that were paid and followed up in integrity most of the time. I would say sometimes we could probably do that too now, but I mean, there's so many alternatives for 0% financing and I mean that we can take advantage of and not be the bank holder. And so long story short, kind of got off on a tangent there with the receivables and the finances. And then I just started digging into the accounting side. And I really learned that I love to plan by numbers because it just makes sense to me. But you got to know where you're at now to know where you're going, I suppose.
Learn where you are today, learn where you're going, but actually have some kind of number you can shoot for. I mean, that's the know where you're going, but Did you know where you were going, or was it a 20 group? Was it peers? Was it networking that said, hey, Tim, you know, you really need to shoot for your effective labor rate to be here?
Yes, I got a lot of coaching from a lot of different coaching companies. I was kind of like a sponge, and I did everything. I did all kinds of different coaching from a lot of different mentors, got into 20 groups and learned about, you know, ARO and car count and marketing. And, you know, as it's grown, it's a constant. I'm still learning, still trying to keep up with it all.
What was the biggest number that you looked at and you said, wow, that's something I could fix pretty darn quick?
I would say ARO was probably the biggest. When we started doing inspections, we realized, you know, making every car count was bigger and better than just having more cars, I suppose. That was the biggest thing.
For anyone who's listening, who maybe doesn't appreciate and understand KPIs, we usually talk about them in acronyms, ARO as average repair order. But I think if you're in business today running a shop, maybe not. You know, there could be some startups that are, listen, I got tools, I got a garage, let me do this. And they listen to the podcast and start realizing the things that they don't know about really being a good business person. When you work with clients, are there like five or six key KPIs that you really want to take a look at before you even take them on?
I mean, I wouldn't say before I take them on. I do a couple of key points are ARO, I would say, effective labor rate. Car count is probably a number one. We look at productivity percentage compared to car count. Those are probably the key ones. Gross profit, obviously, is a big one. We want to make sure we're billing accordingly or billing correctly.
So you do the research with this potential new client and you look at all this stuff, and you probably do more listening than talking because you're really trying to find out how well it is that you can work with somebody. And the reason that I'm kind of digging down here, Tim, is there's an awful lot of people out there that need a coach, maybe wouldn't know how to approach it, and could listen to both sides of a story. They know what their story is, but you know, what's the coach looking for from me? And when he says, listen, we need to do this, and a potential client may push back on one of these areas and says, no, we're not going to grow our average car count at all. We're going to grow our average ticket. Okay, well, then you can grab onto that and build on that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing, you know, when we start off with clients, it takes a while to get the whole story. We kind of get, well, my P&L has been messed up since 2019, and I haven't had a balance sheet done, and you know, there's more to the story. There's a lot of great shops that have that stuff dialed in. I think, yeah, we got to really investigate. Sometimes I call it like our automotive forensic accounting to figure out where all of these numbers are, where we're at. And it's hard because as soon as I find out exactly where we are, we can make a plan together and say, hey, this is where we need to go. Like I said before, you know, we need to focus maybe more on ARO, or we need to focus on getting more cars in, or we're only 50% productive. We need to take advantage of that or do more inspections. It varies from shop to shop, truly, because every shop is different, and all of, no shop is the same. They all have different processes and procedures. And it just seems like if we get the whole story right up front, no matter how good, bad, or it is, we can help a lot more efficiently.
But you've got to have a client or a shop owner that's got an open mind, probably a little bit more open than maybe it currently is.
Yes. And ego. I have a big ego. I mean, I think I'm humble enough to willing to learn. But I've learned from having a bad big ego at one point in my life or whatever. But just be humble to want to learn and do better. And I think that's one of the best things an owner can do.
We've recently done an episode with Chris Clodier just within the last couple of weeks, Tim, and it was on ego. It was a great dialogue. I think if an individual was suffering, didn't even know they were suffering with a big ego, but they kind of think so. It was a great episode to help break it down. I always think of being confident as sometimes being, he's confident. No, he's got a big ego. No, he's really, really confident, but he's not touchable. He's not vulnerable. If you want to be confident, toss off some of the ego, then be a better listener. Be touchable. not untouchable, because people with ego are untouchable, try to build that confidence intelligently by becoming a better student of the industry and or of your craft.
I think a lot of owners or whoever signs up for coaching, sometimes they think like, okay, we have a magic pill, or this coaching company has a magic pill to fix all the problems. And I've been through a lot of different coaching. Nobody has a magic pill. Secret sauce. We don't have a secret sauce. I tell you what, but we can keep you accountable. We can make, I know we can help with results. I know other coaching companies out there has helped me in the past with better results. But somebody's got to hold your feet to the fire. You got to really want to learn. You got to be willing to change. You got to be willing to accept the responsibilities of wanting to do better. And I think that's a big part of it. You can get a lot of great free information out there at the library. You know, if you're not going to make change, save your money and check out some books at the library.
Accountability, to me, is the strongest part of having a coach. Okay, I hired you, Tim. I'm going to sit in the corner over here. I'm going to watch you work your magic. That coaching relationship probably should end at that moment in time.
Yes. I do a lot of learning about myself, studying and trying to learn how to communicate better with others. And how I coach one shop owner is sometimes totally different from another shop owner, just because of different personalities. Sometimes, yeah, I got to push, pull, and drag this guy up the hill to get him to make a change or whatever. And sometimes this guy's jumping off the hill into the lake before I even be like, hang on, wait, you know? So it just depends on the person and how willing they are to learn.
Their communication style, their strengths as an individual, their status of how hard they've been working and where they currently are. Do they really know that maybe they're bleeding to death and they just can't quite see that?
Yes, very true.
You and I chatted before we got on the show, and it was one of the things that you said that I really want to kind of dig into a little bit here, and that is that the shop management system says, this is my gross profit, but when I got my profit or loss statement from my accountant, it doesn't match. And I'm trying to say, where's the problem?
The biggest thing that I see is that the point of sale system, no matter how good or great it is, and there's a lot of great ones out there, they don't account for calculating gross profit on labor a lot of times, because we all have different pay plans. Not everybody has just flat rate technicians. Not everybody has their loaded cost built into their point of sale system. Not every point of sale system accounts for the gross profit with their service team or their service advisor or manager or whatever. You write the checks and pay the bills out of the QuickBooks or your accounting gross profit dollars. If we don't have that aligned within our point of sale system, we might be writing up unprofitable estimates. And so I really, really, really strongly encourage those with your point of sale systems to make sure that their gross profit is aligned with their QuickBooks from their point of sale system.
Hey, Carm here. Now coming up, Tim shares the bonus structure he uses to get his whole team motivated and involved. Hey, if you're like most people, it's becoming increasingly difficult and time-consuming to keep up with changes in the industry, especially those driven by technology. But there's one event that will keep you and me ahead of the curve, and that's APEX, the Automotive Aftermarket Products Expo. You know, the resounding best feature of APEX last year was Repair Shop HQ and Joe's Garage. It is designed for the service professional. Now, there you'll see the latest new products. You'll learn about emerging technologies. You'll hear about the hottest trends and changing consumer behaviors and attitudes. Most importantly, you'll learn how to prepare your business for the future and not be left behind. This is the one show to attend if you're serious about staying ahead of the curve and growing your business. Hey, don't miss out. Mark your calendar now for APEX 2022, November 1st through the 3rd at the Venetian Expo and Caesars Forum Conference Center in Las Vegas. To learn more, AAPEXshow.com. Hey, we all have bad days when we just want to turn to someone and ask, how the heck do I fix this? When that happens to you on the business side, which may not be your strong suit, you want someone quick and you want them to be clear. That's exactly what Dan Groen from Detroit Garage found when he peppered the folks at Shopware with questions about how to make the most of its shop management system. As he puts it, they continually solve the curveballs we throw at them. With seven shops, Dan jokes that he knows he's a demanding client, but that's the sign of a guy committed to his business. Even better, the Shopware support team met every challenge with, in Dan's words, impressive capabilities and vigor. No complaints, no hassles, just a commitment to help Dan through his day. As Dan says, we make each other stronger. Now that's a partnership that works. It's time. Get Shopware.com. If you're coding every one of your costs correctly, as you write a check, pay a check, QuickBooks, however you're cataloging your expenses, your P&L, and correct me if I'm right or wrong, Tim, your P&L should reflect a much more accurate and intelligent gross profit margin than the SMS.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. Yes.
Is it hard work, Tim, to try to get them aligned? Or should you accept the fact that continuously there's a five-point gap, and I'm good with that. I'm going to rely on my P&L, but I always know that there's this gray area because I can't completely define my cost of labor.
It depends on the setup. It depends on the labor setup and what you can put into your point-of-sale system. I have shops that are okay with like being 5 points off. I try to get within 1 or 2% of mine, and I like mine to be on the conservative side, whereas my P&L is actually a few points higher than my point of sale system. Now, truly, it does change month to month, and I think it does take continuous monitoring, and we really need to adjust almost monthly when you get your P&L back. But once you do it after 3-4 months, you can generally be within a few points of your point of sale system by adjusting the labor accordingly. Very simple way that I do it, and it's not always 100% true, but what I generally take is the total billed hours for the month. I divide my total labor cost for the month by the total billed hours, and then I have a cost per hour, right? Cost per billed hour. If our labor costs for the month were $50,000 and we billed out 500 hours, we can put in our labor costs as $100 an hour. And people are going to be like, oh, that's crazy. They don't cost me $100 an hour. Well, truly, they do a lot if that's what your payroll says on your P&L.
So smart to be able to take what the P&L says and kind of back into the SMS.
Yeah, I strongly recommend people at least take a look at that.
Because you're driving on a daily basis, weekly basis, gross margin in your company. If you're the kind of leader that is managing your KPIs and your team knows where the numbers go and how it works, then striving for the right gross margin is one of the smartest things you could do.
Yeah. The other thing that I would just make sure too is that the parts cost in your point of sale system matches the parts cost on your P&L. Your tire cost point-of-sale system matches your parts cost on your P&L. I do find discrepancies with that. And sometimes it's a matter of an accounting error. Sometimes it's a matter of, parts for so-and-so's car that didn't get billed through the SMS system or the point-of-sale system. Because truly, that's where the money's left over.
If the gap on the parts is a serious gap, it's a great point. You may have not gotten credit for returns, cores, alleged defectives, and non-billing. You put on your auditor's hat with your team, and you go searching for the answer.
And it's not that hard to do. A lot of these point-of-sale systems are super great, and some of the latest ones out are super great with being the forensic accountant to go back and look.
You can't ignore discrepancies. You've got to find out why they exist.
And if you keep after it, and if it's like you're doing, like I'm looking at January's today, it's a lot easier now than it is come December when your parts costs are $50,000 off at the end of the year rather than $2,000 off for just January. It's easier to find it now.
A great point. You and I also chatted about, I want to put the key in the door. And I just want to know what my nut is. When I was a kid, that's what my dad taught me. Carm, you got to know the nut in sales. And at the end of the day, what it takes us to do in sales to make any money. I think that is so critical for the people who walk through the door that work for you to realize, listen, you've all got keys, you put it in the door, but what's our daily challenge? To me, that's got to be a very simple form of a KPI to deal with.
This is generally where I get the dry heaving from the owners when I'm going over these numbers and diving into what it costs down to the minute almost within their shop. Just to turn the key, you know, to start off pretty simple. Take the P&L, take your fixed expenses, figure out how many hours you're open per week, and you got cost per hour, just to turn the key on. And I'm not including wages, I'm not including the parts, I'm not including any of the cost of goods. But if we can dial in, like, yeah, it's $100 an hour just to turn the open and close sign, open up the door and turn the lights on, because my light bill, my gas bill, my rent, my mortgage, whatever, all of that's included. We know that we're starting off at negative $2,500 today just to make ends meet. And we know that that 15-minute break or that 15-minute comeback that we had to come back and recheck Mrs. Jones' oil, that just cost me $68, not including paying a technician or buying an extra part or whatever. And sometimes that's what I'm saying. Like, this is where like shop owners are like going, oh my God, their eyes start to cross and go, why am I in business?
It's neat to be able to show a shop owner or have a shop owner buy into the math, the theory, the strategy, the logic behind this, and let them have that come to Jesus meeting and say, oh my God, we're starting out 2,500 in the hole, and then celebrate it to 30 when you reached break even. But it's not a celebration because now there's no profit. It's just break even. And that's one of the things that it hit me a whole bunch of years ago, that we weren't here just to break even, you know, in sales that should generate this kind of profit. We have to do sales to make profit.
Absolutely. I think those numbers are great to go over with your team. Like, for instance, at the end of the year, I just had this meeting with my team and it was an eye opener, even for my manager. He's like, holy crap, I didn't know that we had to do that much just to turn the key or just to turn the lights on or whatever. And it's insightful once they get on board and understand, because I know the next day, I think one of my advisors was like, all right, boys, let's get to work. We're 2,500 in the hole today, you know, and they were excited and ready to go. It's kind of fun.
Showing your people the numbers, showing your people the expenses. And again, it goes back to one Town Hall Academy I did with Patrick McHugh called Where the Numbers Go. And I've talked about this on the show over and over again. I used to do this, you know, back when I worked for corporate America. And, you know, it's just like people are sitting there with their mouth gaping opened. And all I did is I basically took a $100 sale and I broke it apart as to where does that $100 go? And thank God that we have 8% at the end, you know, there's $8 out of that $100 sale that we could consider profit. But wow, new equipment and future payroll raises and all, you know, all that stuff that has to come out of that profit, including paying Uncle Sam, is I think a shocker for many people who just come in, collect the paycheck every day.
Yeah, very much so. Just at my shop, we had a car that got scratched on a tire machine pulling in January by a technician. It was an accident. Stuff happens. But I mean, it happens at my shop too, right? So we were just talking about, okay, well, that body work got paid for in February, just wrote the check just a week ago. We were talking about our profit from January. Hey, keep in mind, Tim, they're telling me, keep in mind, you still got to write that check for $3,200 for that body work. And I'm like, I know. That's in February. So February, we're now even more negative, you know? And so I really love sharing the numbers with my team, and I think they really appreciate it. I think the transparency is good. I have a great team. Fortunately, they're all paid very well. They love what they do, and they want us to strive. They want me to strive. I want them to strive. And I think that's key. And I think if shop owners are willing to share that the plan and the play of whatever we're moving on next, that makes the team morale better. And then all of a sudden our ARO climbs. And then if you can communicate together, the whole business just gets better.
Do you find that's a big problem in our industry?
Yes, I do. I see communication styles that are not necessarily the best. I see a lot of great ones. I'm constantly trying to improve the way that I communicate, learning about communication for sure.
It's twofold. They don't know what to share, how to share it. They may not even know what the numbers mean themselves. And number two, the transparency, the power of transparency. They may not feel that their people could handle that information. Even though I'm sharing it and I'm being as transparent, I can't test the pulse of my people by thinking he's still making too much money and he's not paying me enough. It may go, and correct me, Tim, if I'm right or wrong, that the culture's got to be right in the company, I think, before you start sharing finance numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm fortunate enough to have a super great team that I can trust. And I agree. Yeah, day one on the job, you're not sharing the gross profit, net profit with a new guy that just started, right? I think this is something you build to with your team. There are some, you know, people on my team that are like, yeah, I don't really care. I do want to do my job or whatever. I don't care about the gross profit or the net profit or whatever. Until you can show them how it affects them or how it affects their paycheck or how it affects the business. And then I would say more often than not, they'll come around and realize like, that comeback, that's going to hurt our GP. Okay. Our monthly bonus is going to be affected potentially, or, you know, that new lift we were talking about buying, that just puts it back a step further, or that the new equipment upgrade, that's just step further behind. And I think they start to, the wheels start churning and it helps with the team. And then we get questions asked and the communication's open. And I'm not afraid to share, I guess.
Good for you. You just said the B word, bonus. There's a group of shop owners in front of you and you're there to come in and talk about bonuses. What kind of ideas would you toss at me?
Varies from shop to shop again, but I would say my favorite is I like the team all working towards the same goal so that everybody gets the same bonus or the same, everybody's on the same plan. I don't want one guy focused on car count and one guy focused on ARO or one guy to focus on inspections and one guy focused on discounts or whatever. I like everybody to have the same bonus. And I try to do one monthly, sometimes quarterly. And we change it up, but to keep it maybe exciting a little bit different. Like for instance, if the good one that I like is ARO is more than 750, everybody gets $500 or whatever. And I'm talking technicians, service advisor, because everybody affects that, especially the technicians. That's just kind of an example. Or if we hit X amount in sales, $100,000 in sales, everybody gets the same bonus. We're all working towards the same goal. They're all excited. And generally, we have a chart or a whiteboard with whatever the goal is for the month. We tally it up and we're checking it every day and everybody's kind of keeping an eye on it. And it's kind of fun too because it's kidding and there's a lot of... I want to make sure that, hey, you might have to sacrifice something today. You might be a technician where you have to help another junior technician grow and it's going to take 20 minutes out of your day to help him pull a car in or help him with an alignment or whatever. But in the long run, your bonus of $300 is the equivalent of 6 hours of labor or 5 hours, you know, whatever. So keep an open mind about that.
Very good. Thank you for that. Effective labor rate, I mean, there's some things we just don't charge for. And you have to know about that to see what the math works out to. And one of the things that I just kind of hear a little bit more about is that we're not charging for inspections. And maybe we should or we shouldn't. Or maybe we should include them in an all points, you know, oil change thing so that we can actually put a number in it or on it. What's your opinion of that?
It does affect effective labor rate. Free stuff will affect effective labor rate. However, sometimes you got to do free or lower commodity style repairs like oil changes and whatever to get the people to the door or to, you know, maintain relationships with customers. I think as long as your true labor rate is strong and good and profitable and it, you know, you're productive, you got enough gross profit in your labor rate based on your hourly expense, you're going to be fine. I have a long form and a short form inspection. One is free and one is paid for. The long form one is generally like, okay, I'm going on a road trip and I want to know everything and it's going to take my technician an hour plus. So we're going to pay or charge the customer for it and the customer knows up front rather than the free courtesy inspection that we do with an oil change. And that's a no tools visual inspection.
Can you justify the no charge digital vehicle inspection knowing that you're going for safety, reliability, and opportunity.
Absolutely. If your inspections are thorough, and you have a good service counter, and they are selling off of the inspections, and you're doing very good inspections with a lot of pictures, I'm not sweating a free inspection. I would do free inspections all day long with thorough inspections all day long. And I think my team would too.
Wow. Okay. So here you are, become a coach. How'd that come about?
Luck, blood, sweat, tears, I guess, a little bit of everything.
Something you wanted to do, huh?
Actually, it is. You know, as I was learning, as I was receiving coaching, as I was always intrigued by it, I'm like, gosh, what a great thing to do to help somebody better understand their business. I've learned so much. I want to wear my jammies every day and sit behind a computer and tell the people how to run their business. That's what I thought a coach was. Well, I mean, I've learned it's truly not that. I wish it were. I really enjoy learning about other businesses. I love the automotive. Every time I'm driving down the road, I'm looking inside an automotive shop, like wondering, huh, I wonder how they do that. Oh, that's a nice looking shop. Oh, the outside.
But why don't you just stop in, Tim, and say, let's have a coffee?
I have done that. I'm doing a shop visit actually in Louisiana next week. And I love learning about their process, their employees, learning about their team. I just love that part of the business. So it morphed into, I got into a 20 group. And then it was more so people started asking me questions. People started saying, what do you think about this? And then I would bounce ideas off them. And I was learning as I was going. And I'm still continuously learning. I learn from shop owners that I work with every day. I really love it. I enjoy it. I like the industry. It's kind of, you know, I guess in my blood since I've been doing it for so long.
It's great to wake up every day and do what you want to do.
Absolutely.
Tim Schaefer, thanks so much for being here, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Carm. Have a great day.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.